is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. Inside Douglas County is presented by Concrete Builders Supply. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Afternoon, we're in the summer, and it's probably a good time to think about your garden and related activities. Steve Ringquist from the OSU Extension Service, thanks for coming in this afternoon.
Hey, you're welcome.
So we're a few days officially into summer, not very far, but certainly with this historic weather we have coming up, that has got a lot of people outdoors, although maybe Sunday it pulls them back inside. Talk about things people could be doing gardening-wise right now and should be doing.
Yeah. Well, I think number one, right now, because of the heat that's coming at us, that it's going to be a real special kind of thing, that try to just keep things as watered as possible. Keep all your plants that are important to you very hydrated. You know, turf grass, that sort of thing, can dry out, can brown out, and it'll come back. But if you've got your favorite shrubs and flowers and fruit trees and so on, berry bushes, keep them watered. Now, you don't overwatering them doesn't help them. You know, they can only pull up so much water at a time. So just keep that soil moist and nice. And the other thing is, if you have the means to put a little, they have these shade cloths that you can put up, but don't lie a shade cloth right down on the plant, let's say on your vegetables. You just don't want to do that. It'll even make it worse. It'll burn. You got to have that air movement underneath. So suspend the shade cloth somehow up above a plant, either using hoops, you know, over maybe to hold them off your vegetables, or you can even suspend them up in the air like you would maybe suspend a tarp, you know, just to give you rain protection. But do the same thing with some sort of any kind of a cloth of any sort, but there are specific shade cloths, and usually white is best, you know, so it's reflecting any of the light and the heat. And it's not 100% critical for everything. You know, a lot of plants can tolerate this, but you will see after, if we hit 100 plus, you will see some sunburn on a lot of plants. And so there isn't a whole lot you can do about it. You just keep them hydrated, and the plants will push out some new leaves when they get a chance.
A lot of people, if you've got a sprinkler system, sometimes folks have it, you know, programmed and set to go at a certain pattern based on what seems to work best or mm-hmm. the level of greenness they want or whatever. And I suppose during the next few days, and really, I mean, next week's going to be cooler, but we're still going to be in the 90s in the
right.
forecast,
right.
is maybe ramping that up a bit, but also knowing when, in terms of when in the day, it's effective to water.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And then that's a good point. And typically, your best time to water is in the morning. And I noticed a lot of people in my neighborhood have their sprinkler systems on timers set for night. As soon as it starts getting dark in the evening, the sprinklers come on. And that's not a particularly good time. If you're watering in like 8, 9, 10 o'clock at night, what happens? The surface of the plants stay wet all night until the mid-morning, and then plant diseases can kick in. Mm. And you can get a lot of fungi and mildews and things like that, molds and mildews growing. So typically it's best to water early morning. If you start watering at 5:30, 6:30, 7:30, you know, that sort of thing, and people will say, yeah, but you know, my plants are stressed by the end of the day. Well, if you fill that soil, you know, and get that soil charged pretty well, they'll do fine. And you could go out and maybe run a short set, you know, in the evening, but do it at like maybe 8 o'clock, where you're still going to have a little bit of evaporation going on.
Now, sometimes I've been known to flip on the sprinkler system to begin. I've got a four-cycle small yard to begin as I walk out the door just before 3 a.m. Is that too early?
Yeah, it's probably a little early, but if you've got your surface of your plants wet and they're sitting there wet for about 4 hours probably if you're doing it at 3-4 in the morning. That's plenty of time for the molds and fungi to start germinating and getting going. Especially bad for food crops to do that, but not quite, certainly not bad at all for a lawn or a tree, a shade tree, that sort of thing. The lawn, maybe you get a little bit of mold going, but nothing too bad.
You know, Mike Witters is often, I think he probably walks up to people's houses and knocks on the door and tells them, but it's talked about the number of times he sees people watering at 4 p.m.
yeah.
when it's a 90 degree day.
Yeah, that just is evaporating pretty much all of it. And I've even done some tests with sprinkler systems. Now, if you're using a drip irrigation system, no problem. You know, you can go any time of the day that you want. You're not getting surface wet. If you're using a low sprinkler system, and let's say you're in an orchard where the fruit trees are up above, then again, you know, you're getting a lot of shade from those fruit trees on the ground. Then it wouldn't be that big of an issue. That would still work pretty well. But if it's ornamental and turf and vegetables, that's not so good.
So what about thinning on trees, maybe especially fruit trees? Mm-hmm. Should that still be going on?
Yeah, you know, the fruit tree thinning, usually we try to get those apples and pears and so on within the first 60 days after bloom. So we're slightly past that. So if you've got a load of apples and pears on that tree and it looks like the branches are going to break, and it would make sense for you to get out and thin those. And when I talk about thinning fruit, don't leave clusters of apples or pears or plums on a tree. Thin them down to singles, you know, so you've got a single piece of fruit on a spur that's coming there, a fruit spur. And that way, number one, you're going to have higher quality fruit, but you're also not going to break the limbs of your fruit trees.
Now, is thinning, should it be done a lot differently on fruit trees versus just regular, you know, maples and other kinds of trees?
Yeah. Now, with shade trees and so on, you really don't have to do any kind of thinning. They'll usually shed themselves, and any excess load they have, and they're much stronger, typically, the wood is. Now, with the fruit tree, you're putting on a tremendous amount of weight on that limb, and so that's the big difference. You know, if it's a maple tree or an ash tree or something, you're getting a lot of seeds, but there's not much weight there.
A lot of people here grow berries. What about pests this time of year?
Yeah, well, with the we have these two or three kind of troublesome new little pests. One is the spotted wing Drosophila. It's a little vinegar fly. Now, it's really not that new. It's been around about 10 years here, 10, 12 years. And what you really are going to see is when you go to pick the berry, the raspberry or blueberry, which right now are ripe, they're going to be soft and mushy. And what's happened is that little vinegar fly lays its eggs in there in the fruit, and that little worm, or it's like a little larvae in there, will start feeding in there, and of course that causes the fruit to mush out. And the key there is, if you have a lot of ripe fruit, you know, you got to keep picking, pick fast so you don't have it, and so it doesn't sit on the vine and then get mushy. If you can pick in the morning, like we talk about with watering, get out there and pick in the morning when that fruit is cool. And then if you're getting more fruit right now than you can eat fresh, just freeze it as quickly as you can. And if you have a spotted wing Drosophila, any of these kind of pests like that, if you have them around and maybe they've laid eggs in the fruit, that it doesn't cause anybody any physical harm. You freeze it, you can still consume it, and it's not a problem. And you won't even know it. Now, if you're trying to eat this fresh, soft, mushy ones, yeah, you'll know it. It'll be pretty unpleasant.
What about the disease issues? I mean, now we're not going to have any rain, really, to speak of for a while. Does that help things?
Yeah. You've got, with our dryness here, the one benefit of course, warm, dry weather is the fact that you don't get very many diseases at all with your plants. Now, where disease can kick in is if you're a person that likes to water with sprinklers and you're kind of spraying over the top of plants and you're getting the plants quite humid, then disease can kick in and you can have a little bit of disease issue then.
Going to take a break. More when we come back. Steve Ringquist from the Oregon State University Extension Service. They interview a podcast after one at 541radio.com, 1246 at News Radio 1240, KQEN. Douglas County, 1248, Lars Larson coming at 1, and KQEN Local Talk at 4. We resume Umpqua Valley Live this afternoon, and I'll be live from the Summer Arts Festival at 4 o'clock. Monday, County Public Health Officer Dr. Bob Dannenhofer and one of the Douglas County Tiger Team folks will be on Inside Douglas County. Steve Ringquist from the Oregon State University Extension Service talking about gardening and related items here as we're into the summer and certainly the very hot conditions. That's like an understatement right now when you talk about historic heat. Well, as we realized yesterday, and I've been on the phone with the forecasters at the Weather Service just about every day, but when you talk, you know, you're used to a certain level of heat in the Umpqua Valley, Rogue Valley warmer, but when you see the entire west part of the state and even a lot of the east, maybe at a historic level for all time in the next few days, that is rather daunting. You mentioned watering a bit ago. What about spraying during these big heat waves?
Right. One of the issues that I am constantly working on with the public and a lot of agricultural, but even more people that have a small, like a 5-acre parcel in the country, and they really aren't in the agricultural industry, but they have to take care. They want to take care of their property. They do have a tendency to come out and start spraying herbicides a lot from June and July and August. And one of the things that I've always preached and really try to get people to understand is that when we get these warm temperatures, these products are very unstable. You can take your herbicide out in a cool part of the morning and make an application on, let's say, to kill some blackberries, or you have other issues with weeds, and you go out and you make a perfect spray on that row of blackberries along your fence that you're trying to clean up, or even the dandelions in your yard. Perfect spray, every conditions are perfect, and then about 3-4 hours later, we're up into the mid-90s. And what happens? Those products that have been sprayed properly onto the surface of these plants volatilize. And they volatilize, and then you know how around here when it gets hot, the wind picks up and starts pushing around and throwing all that product that's volatilizing. It just starts drifting away over to your neighbor's yard or over to the person who has the other farm next door. And so that's one of the issues that I really want to get people to understand again. Don't spray herbicides above 90 degrees. You start hitting 90 and above, then just put them away. And if you have to spray, spray earlier, a little earlier in the season when you're really in the 70s and low 80s. That's really better, much better. And also when you're looking for a herbicide, don't look for the amine form, a salt form. It'll say right on the container, amine form versus the ester form. Ester formulations work great in the spring and the fall, but they're too volatile for the summertime for that heat. They really volatilize rather easily. So when you're out shopping this time of the year, if you have to use a herbicide, be patient. Wait for the cool, like 2, 3, 4 days where we're back into the 80s, even if it's high 80s, that's better. And kind of keep an eye on the wind, too.
What about, some people, if they're not running a sprinkler system, sometimes people water and they put the water on for a few minutes and they leave it at that. And then maybe they do it every day or whatever.
Right.
Some people do it twice a week and do it for a longer period of time. What's better?
Yeah. Generally speaking, if all you're watering is, all you're worried about is your lawn, the perfect way to do a lawn, of course, is to give it exactly what it's using. So you replace it periodically. So if you want to, if you're in 85 degrees, your lawn's using probably about 2/10 to maybe 1/4 inch of water a day. And so if you talk to the professors, they'll all say, oh yeah, the perfect way to water a lawn is 1/4 inch a day. Well, you know, that's if you don't have trees and shrubs and everything else in the hot weather and the wind. And so what I kind of encourage people to do, because not everybody has a timer, but and that makes that more convenient, but go out and water a little more heavily, so you're kind of, you know, stocking the up the moisture level in the soil, and water maybe 2 or 3. When it's really hot like this, you might need to water like 3 times during the course of a week, but water so you're really filling the zone, the root zone, or whatever your target plant is. If you're trying to do a lawn, you know, that's about 4 to 6 inches deep, you know, so water fully, you know, 2-3 times a week like that. If you've got trees and shrubs, your target area is 2-3 feet deep. So you're going to have to water several hours. You know, you're going to want to run that water for 2 or 3 hours. And people say, oh my gosh, you know, but the tree does not like watering, you know, just the top 6 inches. That'll get, the tree will get some moisture, but it's not getting very much. And so it'll have to kind of hunker down.
What about soaker hoses, the deeper irrigation? Is that kind of easy to put together? I mean, some people might think that's a lot of extra work, or maybe aesthetically, does it look as good?
Yeah. Well, I always tell people if you've got a little extra money up front and you want to set up a drip system and you don't know anything about it, you know, hire a professional to come in and do that, and that's really efficient. However, if you've got trees and shrubs, it's kind of hard to get them really a good soak when you're using drip. You can, but you got to put a lot of emitters around. Now, for people like myself who prefer to use the soaker type of application, I use soaker hose rather than drip irrigation, and get the hoses that allow the soaking, and those are wonderful for vegetable gardens. You can stretch it along the whole row of your plants and use that soaker. It delivers the water a little more effectively right to the target, but it also you get a lot faster application. So let's say in an hour you've got a good soak on that, versus a drip that might have to come on for a couple hours 3 times a day. And so, you know, really it's a lot harder in the excessive heat situation also to use a drip irrigation. The soaker is much better.
What about your master gardeners with things kind of shifting? Are they out there doing things yet?
Well, they're out at our Discovery Garden area out by River Forks Park, and they're taking care of that area and trying to grow vegetables for UCAN out there in their Victory Garden. But at the same time, we're really not able to do a lot of in-person training yet. We're waiting for that release from the university that says, you know, well, you can do some programming. You can do, and when I say that, we can do some programming, but we have to be so spaced and it's so limited that I'm really looking forward to that maybe the next few weeks we might be able to get active again, where people are able to congregate a little bit more easily. And inside especially is difficult if we have an inside class. You'd have to be 6 feet apart and all that, and it's hard to get a group of people together.
And are you going to have master gardeners out at the fairgrounds this year during the fair?
Yes, we will. They'll be out in our typical building there answering questions. What is that, exhibition building or something?
Right.
Yeah. And so, we'll have people there. Now, we're still, right at the moment, we're still limited to just one person at a time there. But hopefully next week this might change a little, and then we can have 2-3 people.
Steve Ringquist from the Oregon State University Extension Service. Thanks for coming in.
Yeah, you're welcome.
1257, News Radio 1240, KQEN.
You've been listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN. A daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications. Your home for Douglas County's news team. News Radio 1240 KQEN.